Are you ready to zoom?
Welcome everybody to Boomy versus Zoomy. Whoa. 15. What?
Whoa! 15. I know. 15 I know. Is a number that started my career, Asterios. Did you know this?
What, you started at age 15?
No. My career started thanks to the number 15 and also the age 15. My big breakout hit video was my anime review of Yamada's First Time, where I argue that there is nothing fucking wrong with being attracted to a 15-year-old anime girl. That was big break, baby.
Is that the... Okay, well, first off, for anyone... If this is your first time listening to the podcast...
Welcome aboard!
This is a podcast where an old guy and a short guy talk about bullshit.
Why does it have to be short guy? Why can't it be young guy? That would make a lot more sense. Either tall guy and short guy, or old guy and young guy. Old guy and short guy is a dumb comparison. It's very hurtful to
sorry,
the manly community. Unnecessary roughness in the sport we call life.
Well, much like the Washington Redskins, it's just something. It's something that came up in the past that we're kind of stuck with. Is it kind of offensive? Yes, but we can't change it now. Ooh. There's too much history in it. Yeah. Anyway, I'm Asterios Kobidos. With me is Monkey Jones. Monkey Jones, the video you're talking about, your first breakout, you went viral. Your career actually started because you went viral on Reddit. Tell the story for people who might not know it.
Yeah, it was Reddit and Facebook. And actually, the guy who freebooted it on Facebook did not give me credit, did not link
Boo.
To my stuff. And it got like 3 million views on Facebook, which really irks me. But what are you going to do? But yeah, I made just a bunch of stupid little parody anime reviews making fun of weebs and people of such tribes. And the one where my anime review about Yamada's First Time slowly descends into madness about the age of consent laws. For some reason, that video, about half a year after I posted it, went viral on Reddit, hit the front page, got hundreds of thousands, if not over 500,000 views in about 2 days. And the channel that happened on was then deleted by my... former Let's Play partner Biggs. Then I started a new channel, put it up there again. The same video went viral, and then the channel got deleted by YouTube. So somehow lightning struck twice for this video, and now it only remains on my website, where I think it has garnered about 2,000 views. Tragedy.
2,000 hard-earned Vimeo views. This is how you got to think about it.
One Vimeo view is a million YouTube views.
Yes, because...
it's fucking true.
Here's what you don't understand, and I keep trying to explain to you. Okay, you're on YouTube. Your video comes up as suggested. It starts to play for 2 seconds. You start screaming about something horrible. Someone flips the channel right away. That still counts as a view. Or someone's on Reddit and they just scroll and they see it and blah, blah, blah. They watch for 10 seconds. It counts as a view. On Vimeo, these are people who care about you. They want to watch your stuff. They're going out and seeking it out. People like Notch. Which brings us to our first topic.
Uh-oh.
Monkey Jones, what happened between you and America's wealthiest incel this week?
Whoa. I don't know much about Notch. Is he a famous incel? I know. Did he make Minecraft, or is that a meme that people are perpetuating? Who is this man?
Here's what I know about Notch. I know that he is an incredibly wealthy man who created Minecraft.
Okay, so that's not a joke.
No, it is not a joke. Then he sold Minecraft to Microsoft for like $2 billion.
Wow.
And it's like, well, yeah. See, that is one of the things that Microsoft is good at is this. Having made enough money in the 90s to buy things that work and then just put the Microsoft name on them. Skype, for example. It works.
Yeah, Skype works great. That's why we're on Discord.
We're on Discord because... The reason we're on Discord is because neither of us can figure out how to get side-by-side picture to work in Skype.
Skype so fucking sucks.
I like Skype a lot. I'm a big fan of Skype.
Skype is a boomer platform. Discord is Zoomer Central.
It is. Yes, Skype is a boomer platform. You're absolutely right.
I don't know anybody over or under 20 who even knows what Skype is.
You're not wrong. Okay, when you open up Skype, it has a nice message. It goes, take a deep breath, reminding you to just pause and collect yourself. When you open up Discord, it yells Leroy Jenkins at you. And it's like, I'm not here for your bits, Discord.
It doesn't just disrespect you. Skype thinks you're so stupid, you forget how to breathe.
No, Skype knows you're so stressed out that it might be nice to take a moment just for yourself. In fact, listeners, we're with me right now. On the count of three, take a nice deep breath. Okay. One, two, three. That Skype.
That fucking sucks. I want to go Leroy Jenkins. Hell yeah. I'm a pumped up epic gamer, Asterios. No time to breathe.
Yes, yes. You gamers have caused quite a lot of damage already.
All right, so why is this Notch guy an incel?
Well, here's what I've heard about Notch. I don't know too much about him. So he makes $2 billion, and he outbids Jay-Z and Beyonce for a mansion.
Oh, wow.
In Beverly Hills. He buys like a $65 million mansion, but apparently all of... And this is just stuff I know from the Something Awful forums. Apparently, all he does all day is hang out in his giant mansion alone, wonder why he doesn't have any friends, wonder why people don't come over, and he just like complains about shit on Twitter all day. That's right. He's a $2 billion incel gamer kid. He probably wanted to blow up Fallout 76 because it wasn't good enough. He's one of you guys, which is why, of course, Notch, when asked who his favorite YouTuber was on Twitter the other day, replied...
Mumkey Jones.
He replied Mumkey Jones. He says Mumkey Jones is his favorite YouTuber.
And he got like 10,000 likes on the tweet, and that's almost more surprising than Notch giving me the shout out in the first place, which is weird. I checked. He doesn't follow me on Twitter, and I don't follow him. It's such a random shout out. I had no idea that Notch was aware of me, but I guess that's because until yesterday, I wasn't really aware of him either. But that's Notch. If you're really a big fan and you're so lonely in this Beverly Hills mansion, feel free to invite the Mumkey Boy over for, I guess, a Minecraft play date. You might be a Roblox guy. I don't know. It's like how Tom of MySpace is now on Facebook. Maybe you've moved on, but whatever game you want to play in your mansion, Mumkey Jones is up for the challenge. Let's do it, Notch. I'll be your friend. I could use some friends, too. My last friend got arrested, you know? I don't think Notch has been arrested. I need friends who are not incarcerated.
Well, I mean, let's start asking some very basic questions. Are you now following Notch?
No.
What? He's a billionaire who just gave you a shout out. You follow him on Twitter.
He doesn't follow me. What do you want me to do?
This isn't grade school. But stop trying to get a date to the junior prom by negging a girl. Follow Notch on Twitter so you can DM him.
My DMs are open. If he wanted to talk, I'm sure he would have DM'd me. Me following him does not allow me to DM him. He has to be following me. The lines of communication are entirely within Notch's hands. It doesn't matter if I'm following him on Twitter or not. I play hard to get, Asterios. I'm that type of potential Minecraft buddy.
I can tell. You're playing hard to get.
I didn't follow you on Twitter until yesterday, Asterios. I said, you know what? We've done 14 episodes together. Maybe this man deserves a follow. Once Notch invites me over a couple times, buys me a couple of Ferraris, gets me a few supermodel bikini hot tub experiences, maybe I'll give him that little like button click or follow button, you know?
Okay. Okay, Mumkey Jones.
But Notch was not the only big name monkey shout out. Did you hear what happened today, Asterios?
Oh, I would like to not move off of Notch yet, if that's okay.
You have more Notch material? Let's hear it.
I don't have any Notch material. Uh-oh. I just, there, I'm going to act as a choral character for the audience, which is a Greek dramatic tradition.
We've all read Oedipus Rex.
Indeed. Okay. Well, now I'm thinking about Oedipus Prime, which would be Oedipus Rex and Optimus Prime put together. But now I'm moving back. Okay.
Have you read Oedipus Rex?
No. Let's talk about Notch.
It's insanely good.
Okay.
Look, and yes. As somebody who wanted to be a drama teacher in high school, it was my dream for a long time that one day I would put on a stage production of Oedipus Rex, because every adaptation I've ever seen has been so boring. And this Oedipus Rex, if you read it, it's the most exciting detective caper perhaps of the century that it came out. I think 2,000 years ago. But every performance is so... It's below Shakespearean in terms of this is just fucking boring if you're not some hobby snobby intellectual type. But the actual text of the play is so exciting and fun. I would like to see a modernized, exciting romp of Oedipus Rex. That is my dream after we produce the three movies that we've promised on this podcast.
Okay, well, now I would love to start discussing how we could bring Oedipus Rex to life. Something that, Orson Welles. Orson Welles was always like, let me take Shakespeare and throw some other shit into it. He'd be like, I don't know, Shakespeare, but there's Nazis. Or like, Shakespeare, but it's in, it's in the Old West.
The best Shakespeare adaptation I've ever seen on film is Kurosawa's Ron. Have you seen this film?
Yes!
It's so good! It's literally better than King Lear, and King Lear is my favorite Shakespeare play. He took it and made it better. My favorite character, the Joker, or the Fool from King Lear, he took my favorite character from that and made it three-dimensional and better. Kurosawa, you fucking genius, you did it. Ron is one of my favorite adaptations of all time. It's 3 hours, you might find it boring, but that's the monkey recommendation of the day.
Well, what do you have a take on Oedipus Rex? Like, would you want to set it as like a 1940s film noir hard-boiled detective tale?
No, it's
maybe
just...
Maybe Sin City-ed?
It's so easy to fix it. Every movie I've seen is just they have everybody dressed in boring robes talking in a monotone voice. And it's a man who is trying to save his people, and he's so desperate to save his city that he loves that he ends up realizing he is the reason why they're cursed, and he has to fucking gouge out his own eyes because he fucked his mom and he killed his dad. It's so exciting. Why are they playing this so boring? Just fucking have a little bit of excitement in your voice and it'll instantly be... I mean, it's so good. Just what's on the page. You don't have to change anything. Just perform it. What are you doing, stupid adaptation bullshit? Anyway.
Didn't the same thing happen in... What's the... No, I guess I am just thinking of Oedipus. They have a scene where like someone blinds a bunch of horses, right? Oh, no, I'm thinking of Equus.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Okay. Equus and Oedipus Rex seem like they have a lot in common. They're both Greek plays. Equus is a play where like a mom finds that where a lady finds out their husband cheated on her. And then so she goes and blinds all of the horses with a knife and then kills her own kids to get back at the at her husband.
That's some Shutter Island shit.
Yeah, exactly. But you don't want to, because here's what I'm thinking. Instead of Oedipus Rex, Cyberpunk Rex. It takes place in the year 2008.
Unnecessary.
We got flying cars, fax machines. and then the mystery is maybe it's a mystery. Maybe it's because a computer virus is attacking the town. And then Oedipus.Rex.RX. And the Oedipus, by the way, it's not spelled with an O, it's spelled with a zero. That's his hacker name. He has to deck into the Matrix, which is what we used to call the internet in the 80s before we called it the internet, find out what cyber virus is plaguing the town, and then all of a sudden, he looks at its .nfo file and realizes he authored the virus all along. Thoughts?
You know, Asterios, I gotta be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
I try to be as honest as I can with my friends when it comes to constructive criticism, but I'm just going to say it. I hate every single word you just said.
Don't say the N-word. No, Mumpke.
Don't steal my bit from last week. I hate everything about your pitch, and it made me want to kill myself.
Okay, just like Oedipus Rex does. Makes you sad inside.
No, he doesn't kill
himself. Brings out your inner hatred. By the way, can you tell listeners that I know nothing about Oedipus Rex and I'm just kind of riffing over here based on what Mumpke said?
All right, what do you got about Notch?
Can you say just tweet him back?
Okay.
Hello?
I retweeted him saying that he has shit taste.
Okay.
I thought that was a funny way to respond.
You did that's very, very funny. You've done everything right so far. Oh, but now,
my whole life.
Before this guy gets distracted by his next six pack of $10,000 hookers, tweet at him and go, I would love to play video games with you sometime. I'd love you're invited. Invite him over to your place in North Carolina. Be like, or if it's easier, we can do it at your place. But Notch, I'm a lonely man. I could use a friend. I know you're a big fan. What if you try to make it like, hey, Notch, let me do you a solid and hang out with you, because clearly you're such a big fan of me. I'm big time comedian Mumpke Jones. And let me make your night complete, huh?
You know, Asterios, I could take this down the funny route and come up with all the funny ways I could hit on Notch, but maybe I'll open up a little bit, because you know from experience I am a very shy man when it comes to people who I love and adore and respect. One of the first times we hung out, we went to Stuart Wellington's bar, Hinterlands. Stuart Wellington, of course, being one of the co-hosts on the Flophouse podcast that we just saw live. And you're like, evidently, you know Stuart. You guys are on a first name basis. You guys are talking and chatting. I really want to go shake his hand and take a picture with him, but I'm just so frightened, because this is a man who I've listened to for half of a decade now, and I don't want to impose myself on him. And you literally had to like force me to interact with him and like tell him like, hey, this kid wants to take a picture with you. He's too scared. That's just Stuart Wellington, bar owner. Now you expect me to very publicly ask billionaire Notch to go on a date with me. I really hate to bother those who I think are much better than me. That's why I'm so easily open to speaking to you, because I think we're on the same level.
Now you think that, but originally you were like, how do I get this guy on my show? With a pedophile.
It was so hard for me to ask you to come on to me and DigiBros podcast.
Right. I know it was.
We were so intimidated by you because you were the guy. You were the guy. And now I know you are just a guy. And maybe we're all just guys, and that I'm putting everybody up on these pedestals for no reason. Because at the end of the day, we're all just guys.
You know who else is just a guy? Notch's social media manager or agent who will pass along your... You don't have to do it in public. Send a DM and go...
I can't send a DM. It's not open.
Follow him so he can follow you back so you can DM him.
Maybe.
Then go, Notch, it really meant a lot to me that you gave me a shout out. I'm a huge fan of Minecraft. Oh no, creepers, they're destroying my base.
I'm so glad
love
that my
Let's chopping up.
It's a good thing my Let's Play channel got deleted, because I have a 20-part Let's Play series on Minecraft where I say how much I hate it and I think it's for autistic children. So thank God there's no longer any video evidence of me saying anything like, oh shit.
Oh! So really, Susan is a hero. Because she saved your relationship with Notch. Matchmaker, delete my channel. Get me with Notch.
Is it bad that I saw a live stage production of Fiddler on the Roof, and I thought it was the most anti-Semitic thing I've ever seen?
Now, I will say this. I feel like the text, I feel like you got to be careful with Fiddler. Is it possible that there were a lot of non-Semites playing Semites?
There were zero Jewish people in the production.
Now we're starting to get a little dicier. Yes. Tevye?
Are you familiar with that musical?
Yes, a little bit I'm familiar with Fiddler.
So let me ask you, based on my only experience with it, And this might sound stupid to any Fiddler fans, because I assume everybody takes it seriously. But my perspective on Fiddler on the Roof was that it was a satire, because every time he sings tradition, and then they would like name off all the traditions that are actually detrimental to their lives. So I thought, yes, it was a satire on traditions being stupid. But it maybe is it the opposite? They're actually respecting the stupid traditions. Am I just too cynical? What's going on?
No, I think you are correct. I think Fiddler is a lot like Romeo and Juliet, where it's just like the adults are wrong and the kids are right. And like, you know, these adults want things done this way with their matchmaking and they want tradition respected. But these kids just want their freedom, their agency, their independence. They want to get their fuck on. Really? It's the first ever Boomer versus Zoomer.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this, not relevant to any of you, but the person playing the fiddler was actually a girl dressed as a tomboy, and we didn't know that until the end of the play when she took off her hat and had long hair, and suddenly I realized I was sexually attracted to the fiddler on the roof. Mm-hmm. They did it.
Yeah, you wanted to fiddle her on the roof. Exactly.
Dangerous.
Now, okay, but was she doing the fiddler like this? Oh, oy vey, was she talking like this?
She did. I don't think the fiddler talks. I think they just play the fiddle.
Okay. Because I'm saying, trans fiddler, now you've got those points that you lost from being anti-Semitic. It's like you got to just get your progressivism levels like balanced, you know? So that's good. So now we're heading back towards zero.
I would hate to call all tomboys trans Asterios.
I'm just trying to help these poor eye. I'm trying to help out this poor Iowa theater who put on Fiddler on the Roof.
This was 5 years ago.
Something.
They've all moved on.
I gotta get these kids something before the Huffington Post finds out and savages this public theater in Iowa.
No. Iowa State University will never be the same.
Wait, what if we put on
a Fiddler on the Roof production in Iowa?
Okay. Yes.
You play all the adults and I'll play all the kids.
I was gonna say, what if we put on Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead or Waiting for Godot?
I've done Waiting for Godot. And my theater instructor told me that according to the playwright, it's actually pronounced Godot. And I thought
I've heard that too.
I thought it was fucking stupid, and I said Godot anyway.
Yes, I've heard that too.
Yeah.
Look, and everyone's like, oh, he's Frankenstein's monster. He's not Frankenstein. It's like, look, I'm sorry. The culture wins.
Yeah.
The guy with the green skin and the bolts in his neck is Frankenstein. It's Waiting for Godot.
Yeah, because
also, it's Gal Gadot. Everyone calls her Gal Gadot. Mm. Sorry, that's not sexy, Miss Godot.
Yeah, the Godot thing is one of those where even though you are technically correct, everybody assumes you are wrong, and you just sound like an asshole if you try to explain, well, technically, the playwright said it was Godot. You just sound like a fucking dick, so yes, just call it Godot. Yes. It sounds cooler anyway.
Yes, yes, that's exactly right. We should always, it's like Stephen Colbert. Well, it was actually Stephen Colbert, because he came from Colbert County, Arkansas, I think, or Tennessee. But then he adds a little accent. Now it's Colbert. Goes to the second city. Next thing you know, he's famous.
Oh,
make yourself sound fancy. He's good.
Is that how it happened? I always assumed that it was for the Colbert Report character that he put that on to be like pretentious. But he had Colbert even before that character.
I believe he had it before as like a stage name thing, but I don't know if there's any Colb maniacs out there who want to correct me. Send us a voicemail. Let us know.
Hell, you're a New York comedian. You're probably friends with Steven. Just call him up and ask him. He's on your speed dial, right?
I am friends with his segment director, yes.
Oh, shit. Well,
yeah, there you go. And I have applied for writing jobs on the Colbert show twice. And both times I've been rejected.
Did they say you were too funny? Because I assume that's the only reason you would get rejected from that show. You did not have enough small hands jokes or two scoops complaints.
Let me tell you something that happened the night that Trump won the election. Actually, this is a great time to take our first break. We will be right back after this break, and I will tell you what happened on the night Trump won the election that may have affected my chances of writing for the Colbert Report.
I didn't know we had breaks, but I guess we'll see you soon.
I want to get a beer. Okay. I'm looking at Monkey drinking this beer. He's lording this beer over me. I'm fucking in a laundry room in a cabin in Tennessee right now. I need a beer.
All right, get your beer. We'll be right back.
I love you guys. And we're back with more Boomo versus Zombo.
What kind of beer did you get? I'm dying to know.
I got Highland Brewing Oatmeal Porter.
Oatmeal.
From Nashville, North Carolina. It's dark, roasty, and smooth, 6% alcohol by volume. It's going to be good.
Sounds like a breakfast beer. Mm-hmm. I guess we're technically filming this in the morning, so it all worked out.
I've been invited on a camping trip by a bunch of listeners of mine and of the Dick Show and of Mumkeys. I'm not kidding. I'm in a house right now with 18 other dudes. I'm in like a super mansion in Tennessee. Right now, Everyone's down in the hot tub. We're all smoking pot. I'm in a laundry room talking to Monkey Jones.
Now, let me take a wild guess here. You said there's 18 people there plus you, so 19 total. I'm going to guess there are also 19 penises currently there.
That is correct.
No women.
Sriracha was invited by name. Also, Monkey, I'm not kidding. You were invited to this.
Here's the wild thing about invitations. I have to receive them to know that I have one. I don't recall ever being invited, but I honestly probably would not have gone because it sounds like a nightmare.
I don't think you would go either. It's okay. So here's what's happening. So they invite me and they're like, hey, we want to treat you to a nice vacation. We know you've been through a lot. This lawsuit, losing your job, all this stuff.
Too much sex with a super hot girl. Just horrible, horrible shit. You can't handle it. You're having a rough life.
It's also really hot sex. It's the hottest sex I've ever had in my life. And I've had some very hot sex in some very hot places. Ooh. And also, listener, in case you're wondering, should Asterius be saying this? Sriracha has specifically given permission to tell people that it's really good sex.
Thank God you said that now, because I did not know that the permission was granted. I just started speaking.
Yes, because one time we had the best sex of our lives, and then the next day I was like, can I tweet this? And she goes, yeah, you can.
Thank
you
God
should
you
tweet
don't
this.
Run that Twitter anymore, because that is irresponsible.
The more I decouple myself from these social media platforms, the better my life
becomes. The better your sex becomes.
But anyway, so I'm in this house and they go, we just want to give you a nice place to relax. We're not going to ask you any questions about drama or lawsuits or anything. I'm like, oh, thank God, because I just want to go to the cabin, watch movies, and drink beer. 5 minutes go by. So are you and Dick Masterson still on speaking terms? I've been asked that. How often do you listen to the Dick Show? Are you ever going to come back on the Dick Show? What's going on with
Maddox?
You've
been ambushed.
What do you think of this puppet? Do you know who the voice of the puppet is? I mean, ask all these questions and I'm like, hey, I thought we all had a deal that I didn't have to work on this vacation. But it's like, what are you going to do? Kids.
So are you going to answer any of these questions, or does it all remain a mystery?
I have answered all of these questions. I mean, I guess I'll answer them again. Yeah, Dick and I text pretty often. I'm not going to go on the Dick Show until probably well after this whole lawsuit business is done.
Smart thinking.
Well, because it's just I don't want to be up there in front of the jury and then have somebody play a clip of someone else on the date. Let's say he has Cernovich on again. Cernovich screaming about how date rape doesn't exist, and then pan over and it's me sitting there uncomfortably. It's that's not going to play well for a jury. Wow. But anyway, here's what happened the night Trump was
elected. Thank God, I've been waiting so long to hear this story.
So none of us expected it. No liberal expected Trump to win.
Oh, no. You said liberal. Never mind.
Yes, exactly. 538.com, our hero, Nate Silver, used his magic computer to tell us that Trump had a 5% chance of winning. And all these polls, Trump is down 15% in every poll, and it's just going to be a cakewalk. And then Trump wins, and immediately I hop on Twitter. And after a year of making fun of Trump and getting retweeted by big liberal comedians, I go on Twitter and I go, Donald Trump, I've loved you all along, and I would love to perform at your inauguration. Uh-oh. Trump 2016. Let's go, Trump. I've loved you, and I'll always love you, Don. And so I just do like a heel turn, and I go like, I know a lot of liberal comedians that I can tell you their names, so you don't book them on these shows. Me and Donald, let's go, Donny boy.
That's a level of satire I don't think I've ever seen you reach before, Asterios, and perhaps never again. The golden age is gone.
And immediately, I'm unfollowed by the head writer of the Colbert, of Stephen Colbert's CBS show.
Talk about being butthurt. Can't even take an obvious joke.
Yeah. And like, people are unfollowing left and right. Everybody's getting really, really triggered. And again, I feel like the joke is pretty clear that it's like, that I'm acting like Joey Pantoliano in the Matrix movies. Like, you know, or as I call him, Joey Pants. But he was also a guy I knew forever. Like, we performed together at Improv Olympic when I was a kid. I remember I was 21 and he was 31, and we were both sitting and drinking at the bar. And
the other original Boomer and Zoomer.
Yes, exactly. And I remember telling him, like, I'm 21 and I haven't accomplished anything. And Joanna Newsom is 21 and then she's got all these big hits. And I remember he went, I'm 31 and I haven't accomplished anything. Imagine being me. Now, 15 years later, that guy's going up to Capitol Hill with Stephen Colbert and following me on Twitter. Anyway, it's one of the many, many reasons I think I won't be writing for that show.
Well, I think you're better off. I think your talents are better suited on shows that have original, fresh content, at least more than once a year. I think I've heard the same regurgitated jokes on Colbert every night, I think, for the last 3.5 years. So it's nice to know that you're not pigeonholed.
You're a big fan because when Mumkin comes over to my place, like, he will just sit on the couch and watch clip after clip of Colbert on CBS.
Not as much as I used to, but yeah, I'll check out. If the headline looks like it could be funny, I'll click on it these days. But then I'm always just so, he proves me wrong almost instantly.
Have you ever read, speaking of like theater pieces, have you ever read or heard of Wigfield?
No.
Okay, Wigfield was this thing that Stephen Colbert and Paul Dinello and Amy Sedaris wrote in, I think it's in the mid-90s. And it's a book full of monologues from a bunch of crazy people who live in a crazy town called Wigfield. And it's kind of an excuse for them to just put on different crazy wigs and scream and yell. That might be good for us to do. We should come up with some kind of two-man theater thing because we're going to go on tour this summer. Oh, so many more people have gotten in touch. A dude got in touch the other day. He's like, I live an hour outside of Detroit. My wealthy family owns a campground. I can get you guys a humongous pavilion with drinks and lights and sound. For free, just come and do it. And I was like, yes, we will come and do it. How does the end of July sound? Yes, we will do that.
If this is in Michigan, let's hope it's not tap water that we're drinking, Asterios.
I'll perform in Flint. Wait, no. Also, no. What's his name? The other guy,
Robert
Elon
De Niro.
Musk. Oh. Crybaby smokes a lot. He said he would fix all the water in Flint, remember?
I'm pretty sure Hillary and Bernie also said that, but...
a lot of people said a lot of things. Yeah, he said it on Twitter. He was like, I'll fix all the water in Flint. And then I think his next tweet was probably like, Fallout 76 sucks. They gave me a plastic bottle instead of a glass bottle I expected. How come this bag isn't made of canvas?
I don't know anything about this Fallout shit, so I will assume you know what you're talking about. But Asterios...
Yes.
Before we go too much into the big summer tour, we have to finish the segment we began with, which is Mumkey being shouted out by famous celebrities, Asterios. It wasn't just Notch. I've had quite a parade, a cavalcade of celebrities shouting me out this week, Asterios. It started when my buddy Nerd City went on a podcast called Cold Ones which features a guy named Max Mofo. You might have heard of him, maybe not. And a guy named Anything for Views. They're from like the Filthy Frank era of YouTube. They're really big names. And they talked all about the Monkey Jones getting banned case. And they gave me a really good defense. I really appreciated that. Then Notch yesterday. But then today, Asterios, did you hear about what happened today? This is the biggest one of all.
What happened today?
And this is going to, I'm going to have to go into some childhood memories to really hit home on why this one is a big deal. But it all started with our mutual, what we'll call him an acquaintance, a mutual acquaintance, Tim Pool. You remember Tim Pool, Asterios?
I sure do, Monkey Jones.
He went on the Joe Rogan Experience. And they talked about me today. And let me tell you, we're going to play a new game on Boomer Zoomer called Was This a Good Tweet? Because when I was a child, my grandmother lived next door to me. And every time the show Fear Factor would come on, I would go over to her house. It would be our weekly little tradition, our little date before we started watching Big Brother and Survivor together. We would watch Fear Factor hosted by Joe Rogan. So I never thought the day would come that Joe Rogan, the Fear Factor man himself, would be discussing me. So when I found out...
And boomers know him from news radio.
And everybody knows him from the Joe Rogan Experience, I imagine, although I have not listened to that program, but I'm sure it is great. But was this tweet good when I found out about the big news? I said, and trigger warning for anybody at all in the audience.
Oh, God.
My tweet. Holy shit. My grandma is gonna fucking cum her panties. Fear Factor was our favorite show. Thanks, Tim.
Oh!
Was me tweeting about my grandmother cumming in her panties. Do you think that was an appropriate tweet?
Yes,
should I call my grandma right now at 12:30 a.m. and ask her if she approves of the tweet?
You know what? Our audience wants you to. I specifically don't.
I would I assume like she's you to asleep. Leave you.
Okay, I would love it if you'd leave your grandmother alone and not try to Tom Green your grandma for views.
Oh, Asterios, why'd you have to bring up Tom Green?
Well, it sounds like I've got the perfect transition. Monkey Jones is a gigantic fan of 90s boomer comedian Tom Green. He's also a gigantic fan of boomer television show Big Brother. Monkey Jones does the thing where he pays CBS extra money to watch them on camera
24/7
between the episodes.
Yeah, I was watching it at your house and trying to make you watch it with me.
I liked what was happening. Yeah. It was fine.
Big, I'm a big brother fan. Not even a big George Orwell fan, mind you. Just a big fan of the CBS reality show Big Brother. They're doing a celebrity season right now for the winter months, and Tom Green was a contestant, and he was doing very well. He really had just a clear way to victory. I've been rooting for him. I've been watching him on the live feeds. Really big fan of him. He's the only guy in the house who is actually having fun, not making it personal. He's being funny. He's taking cereal boxes in his hands in the middle of the night when everybody's asleep. He's just alone doing it just for the cameras, takes cereal boxes and pretends that he's a bird flying with cereal boxes. He's just a delight. And tonight, during the live episode, his dreams and my dreams were cut short, and Tom Green lost the game and was sent home just two episodes before the finale. And I don't take this lightly, Asterios. I've had many grandparents die in my lifetime. I've lost my career. My dreams have been shattered just in the last few months. I had a friend who was arrested for attacking another one of my friends. But let me just say, Tom Green...
Glad you're making that about you.
Tom Green losing on Big Brother was more sad than all of those other sad moments in my life combined, Asterios. You can't understand the personal toil and pain I feel watching what I hope to be me at age 48 lose now, on Big Brother.
Now, our listener may not be able to tell if Monkey's being satirical here or not, and he's doing this weird thing where he's being both. He is actually... I can tell this because I know him. Ladies and gentlemen, this man is actually upset that Tom Green lost Big Brother and was actually rooting for Tom Green. How did Tom Green lose? Was there an alliance? Did Scaramucci get involved? give me the dirt on our new segment, Big Boomer.
Well, it's not going to last a while because Big Brother ends in a couple days. So I guess welcome to the first and last installment of Big Boomer. Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch, the guy who lasted, I think, 13 days in the White House. He and Tom Green formed an alliance with Cato Kaelin, the one of the key witnesses in the O.J. Simpson trial. These three men are counted as celebrities for Celebrity Big Brother, but
a scumbag rat pack. I love it.
In a horrible twist of fate, Scaramucci quit the game 6 days in, but Big Brother, CBS, didn't want to admit that he quit, I think, to keep his reputation upheld. So they made up a twist that he was never actually part of the game and was there as a joke, even though he was obviously actually trying to win and forming alliances. And when he realized he was going to lose, he just left and they made up a story.
I'm sure the charity that he was playing for.
No, it's not for charity.
Loved that.
No, they.
Wait, none of them are playing for charity?
They're playing for $250,000 for themselves. It's not for charity.
Oh. So Mooch lasted longer in the White House than in the Big Brother house.
Yeah, 6 days. So from week one, Tom Green was at a disadvantage. His, one of his three alliance members just walked out the door for fun. And Lolo Jones, an American Olympic hero who has never won any gold medals, and Ryan Lochte, actual American hero who won 12 medals or something like that.
And also pretended to get robbed at a gas station.
And after watching him on Big Brother, I'm convinced he actually thought he was getting robbed. He is...
He's that stupid?
Yes. But he's so adorable. Great. I think Ryan Lochte going on Big Brother was the best possible thing for his reputation. Because he's just a big, goofy sweetheart. And tragically, Lolo Jones is the villain of the season. She forms alliances with people and then declares them to be evil and stabs them in the back. So even though her and Ryan Lochte had this bond, they went to the Olympics together and represented America. Week two, Lolo Jones stabs Ryan Lochte in the back and gets him evicted from the house. Then she decides she doesn't like Tom Green anymore, stabs him and Cato in the back, gets Cato evicted. Now Tom Green, it's one man against the rest of the house, but he's winning competitions. He's taking out the enemies. And he actually looks like if he just wins two more competitions in a row, he could win the whole game. But tonight, he couldn't do it.
What was the competition that he lost? What was involved in the competition?
Well, there were three competitions tonight, he could only play in two of them. He had to win either of the two to stay safe. He lost both of them. One of them was there were a bunch of human art pieces in the house, like people pretending to be sculptures and people who like were painted the same color as the wallpaper and like just standing there. And you had to run through the house with only 90 seconds on the clock and count how many people are there. And then whoever guesses the right number wins. He was off by about seven. I think Tamar Jackson won. I don't even know who that is. I think she's a Real Housewife or something. That's the caliber of celebrity on Celebrity Big Brother. So he lost the first competition. The other one he had to do was they made a fake pilot episode of a sitcom starring Meta World Peace, a basketball player, and Ross Matthews. Just a comedian. I don't know what Ross Matthews does, but they were both on Celebrity Big Brother last year. They did like a little skit, and then all the contestants were given questions on what they just watched. And once again, Tom Green just didn't have what it took. And I think Tamar Jackson won that one too. So tragically, my man, the person who I related to the most, both in life and in the house, tragically lost. And I have no hope for humanity. I have no faith for the future. He was the last shiny beacon in my life. The only representation of somebody like me being successful and having a good time and not being cut down right before they reach their true potential. But unfortunately, it happened again.
Tom Green is a boomer Gen X edgelord hero. That's exactly right. He's out there drinking milk out of cow waters. And you're drinking hot sauce with some sort of death wheel. You know, he was in a movie called Freddy Got Fingered, and you got fingered by Susan when your goddamn channel was taken away. You're both white with white with black hair. Both little skinny boys. Who is left in the house?
No, it doesn't matter.
Is Lolo going to take the whole thing? Is the villain going to win? Our audience wants
Lolo
to know.
Lolo cannot win because the people get voted out. Then when there's two people left, they become the jury, the other people, right. And they vote for who they think deserves to win. And Lolo has been so mean to everybody that on Twitter they're saying, no, fuck Lolo. We're not voting for Lolo. So even if she makes it to the end, nobody's going to vote for her to win. So she's going to get her comeuppance in the end.
But what if Lolo... Oh, sorry.
No, I mean, that's it.
What if Lolo gives the speech where she goes, guys, we're all here to play a game and win a game. Was I rough? Yeah. But am I in the final three? Yeah. You should vote for me, not because I'm a good guy, but you should vote for me because I played the best. What do you think?
I think Big Brother is not just a game of athletic prowess. It's also a social game. So to play the best, you not only have to make it to the end, you have to do it. You have to stab people in the back in a way that they still like you. And she is very bad at that. So unless she's very persuasive, I think she's playing, even if she makes it to the end, a losing game.
Who will win Big Brother Celebrity 2019? Monkey Jones, what's your prediction?
my genuine guess is
yes.
Lindsay Lohan's mom, Dina Lohan.
Dina Lohan's in the house!
She was Tom Green's number one ally after Kato Kaelin was evicted. There were many jokes about Mean Girls and all these things. But I'll say one last thing to wrap up this segment that nobody cares about.
That's what you think, and I know you've been thinking that the whole time, and I think you're fucking
wrong. Nobody in our audience cares about Big Brother but me. Trust me.
You gotta think about it. Look, I don't watch Big Brother, but I care about what's happening in the culture. You gotta think about this like the Flop House. They talk about these movies that nobody cares about. But they still talk about them in an entertaining way. So this is interesting, even though you don't know it.
Well, speaking of interesting, I know to you, perhaps Tom Green is a bit of a joke. He's not somebody necessarily that I should look up to. But he, as you watch him in the house and he talks about his life, he said, you know, he did two or three seasons of the Tom Green Show, and it was really his dream. And he was so happy that he got this big break and was doing it. But then... he was diagnosed with testicular cancer and the show had to come to an end, and like all of his hopes and dreams were shattered and he had to stop doing comedy for a while.
Okay, that's not why the show came to an end, but that does suck. The show came to an end because we all got bored of Tom Green.
How dare you?
He edgelorded himself off the table. So nobody went to see Freddy Got Fingered, and that wasn't the only movie he made that nobody went to see.
The Tom Green Show was so edgy. I've watched so much of it. I don't think it's edgy at all. It's just goofy.
See? But to you, exactly, because to you Zoomers, edgy is now walking around with a Nazi armband, like trying to trigger people. But back in the 90s, edgy was just like, I ate this really hot pepper. I drank milk out of a cow's teats. I took a camera crew into my parents' house in the middle of the night and woke them up and then put that on TV. Like, that's what edgy was.
It's not fucking edgy. It's just funny.
I completely agree that right now, that is totally tame. But in the word edgy is a 90s word. There was a sketch comedy show that starred Wayne Knight and Jennifer Aniston on Fox TV. Guess what it was called? The Edge. Like, it always opened with the cast all getting killed in some hilarious way. Like, I remember seeing Wayne Knight's head get smashed between two hammers. Like, today, that's not edgy. That's just goofy at the time. Edgy.
Well, I think we owe Tom Green and, to a lesser extent, Bam Margera so much for bringing us a new wave of edginess. And they really elevated what edginess could be. And without guys like them, I don't think I ever would have had a YouTube career. They kept pushing the envelope, fucking with their parents, doing ridiculous shit in public. One of my favorite Tom Green sketches is something that I'm surprised has not been remade on Nathan For You, one of my favorite comedy shows of all time.
Nathan For You is amazing.
He did he started a new business called The Undercutters, which is it's a pizza delivery business where they follow a pizza guy, and then as he's delivering the pizza, Tom Green will run up with a different pizza and say, "Hey, whatever he's selling that pizza for, I'll sell you this one for half price." And then the people get so upset with him and they attack him because he's just a weirdo trying to sell them a pizza.
That's great.
It's not edgy, it's funny.
No, look, I agree with you. That's hilarious. Everything that Nathan For You does, very, very funny. Like, I wish comedy was more like that, to be honest. Unless it's like, you also talked about Bam Margera and the, you know, the...
Viva La Bam.
Excuse me, and also the Jackass kids. Remember when Jackass made a guy wear a beard out of pubes and then think he was going to die?
That was a great edgy sketch.
It's too rich for my blood.
No, I think it was Rob himself or whatever his fucking Rab. I don't know what the guy's name was that they did the prank to. But the joke was on him because he was embracing Muslim stereotypes. He was pretending to be a Muslim terrorist, so they punished him for it. He was being a racist or whatever you want to call it, and the joke was on him all along. And that's why I think that's a beautiful sketch.
You know what? I had not considered that. That's a really fucking good point. I still don't like the idea of wearing a pube beard.
Well, of course you don't. Like,
the pube beard is my number one problem with that. When they install a boxing glove in the wall of a hotel and make it punch people at random, that's hysterical. That's
funny.
Pube beard is this where coconuts draws.
Well, that's why that was the big 20-minute finale of Jackass 2, because that's some hardcore shit.
Yeah, you kind of can't top that. Like, you can't turn the dial up louder than that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great movies. Can you think of a funnier comedy trilogy than the Jackass trilogy? What's a trilogy of films that are all consistently funny?
I think the Jackass movies are great. Yeah. I think the Jackass movies are like a super pure distillation of the TV show. I get really, like, empathetic. I don't mean that in a good way. I mean that in, like, a bad way. Like, I feel too much when I watch movies. Like, I don't watch a lot of horror movies. I don't like seeing people get murdered. And, like, when it comes to some of the Jackass stuff, it's like, I don't like seeing people, like, drink stuff or eat weird stuff. I mean, you love Fear Factor. You're watching it with your grandma. Yeah. Like, the thing where, like, they get in, it's like, I can't do, like, I'm in a scorpion tub. Like, I can't, there's also a wrestler called the Boogeyman, and his whole gimmick is that he would come out and then he would eat a bunch of worms in the middle of the ring. And it's like, I can't watch the Boogeyman. There's some of that, like The Office, where it's like, where Michael Scott pretends to fire Pam and then is like, you got pranked.
I think that was, punked. He wanted to punish Stanley in front of everybody. So he pretended to fire Stanley and then,
He may
Did
have
he do this multiple times?
Yeah, because with The Office, they have a thing where the first six episodes of The Office have to pretty much be like a line-for-line recreation of the original British Office. And then after that, like, anyone can do whatever they want. Like Monkey, I'm sure you know this, but just for our listeners who might not know, like, the reason that what's his name? The ultimate comedy edgelord, Mr. God's not real.
Ricky
What's his
Gervais.
Name from The Office? Yeah, Ricky Gervais, the guy that dresses up shirtless and hangs himself on his mic stand like he's Jesus. Have you seen this picture?
No.
Just real quick, do me a favor while I'm telling the story. Can you please look up Ricky Gervais mic stand crucifixion? But anyway, The Office has been spun off into like a million different countries. There's like a French The Office, an Israeli The Office, a German The Office, and of course, in one of the early episodes of the British Office, the guy fires Dawn as a joke, and so Steve Carell had to mimic that and then fire Pam as a joke. But instead of saying it's a prank, because Steve Carell is a really big fan of shows like Viva La Bam, he goes, "You got X'd punk." I think he's trying to say you got punked, but then I think you got exed from the Jamie Kennedy experience. So I think Michael Scott puts them both together in the wrong way. Anyway, Mumkey, what do you think of this photo you're seeing?
He has atheist written across his chest, I assume in blood, and a crown of thorns. And yeah, he very Jesus-like Ricky Gervais figure. I think he looks good. Yeah.
I think he needs to shut the fuck up. It's like, we get it, okay? You're an atheist. We get it. None of us asked if you believed in God or not. We definitely don't care.
I don't know. Guys like him and Bill Maher and The Amazing Atheist, when I'm a 12-year-old kid with and my whole family is telling me that this is reality, and I'm forced to go to church and they're telling me that this is reality, and I'm thinking, yeah, but this is all kind of fucking retarded and bullshit, right? Like, who am I supposed to turn to other than these figures on the internet who are so open about it? Like, like, are you kidding me? This shit's fucking bullshit. Look how ridiculous it is. When I'm 12, I definitely needed that. Now that I'm in my 20s, not as necessary, but I'm glad they existed for the kids out there.
I forgot that you had a religulous experience. Teenage Mumkey Jones is watching religulous like a North Korean guy reading anti-Jung propaganda huddled up in his closet. Mumkey Jones is like listening to his atheists while his jackbooted parents are upstairs beating crosses together and drinking holy water. Mumkey, did you ever come out to your parents as a atheist or agnostic?
No, my parents don't go to church. I had to go with my grandmother. My parents don't really care that much.
Then why do you care about this stuff as a 12-year-old? If there's no rebellious aspect to it,
I'm
saying.
The entire world was telling me that this was the way it was, and I didn't think it was. So it was nice to have an outlet of intelligent, funny people telling me, no, yeah, you're right. It is bullshit. You don't have to believe this shit. You don't just because you're a kid being brainwashed from a young age that all this shit is true, you don't have to believe it. So I really appreciate those guys. And as much as it is, it's so easy to say, like, oh, so edgy of them. They're epic atheists. I appreciate the work they do. I just, I myself would not go as extreme as they do with it.
He literally wrote the word atheist in fake blood on his chest and hung himself on a microphone stand and made himself a crown of thorns. You don't think that's cringy?
I think it's more cringy that people are trying to abolish abortion access because of what they read in a fairy tale book. You know, I'll take the edgelord over people's lives being changed and ruined because a bunch of idiots who make our laws believe in their fairy tale book, Asterios. What's more cringy to you?
Wow. Mumkey Jones has found a whole new edge.
Are we gonna pretend that religious people don't force their beliefs onto other people and ruin their lives? I mean, it's true. I think we should rebel against them. Fuck them. Okay. Am I wrong? Are you pro religious doctrine in our laws, Asterios?
I grew up in a kind of like everything, like every opinion of ours is like shaped by our parents and where we grew up and shit. Like, I grew up in a household where my parents were like, we're going to send you to Catholic school. Can you just lie to them and tell them we go to church? And I remember like telling my parents, like, I can't lie to my teachers, mom and dad. And they were like, can you please just tell them we go like once a month? And I was like, mom and dad, no, I can't lie. And then I remember telling my mom and dad, can I become an altar boy? And I remember my mom and dad laughing in my face and going, absolutely not.
They probably saved you from some horrible mental scarring, Asterios. Thank them every day.
I remember going to them. I was like, all the cool kids in my class are altar boys. Zach and Ryan and Pat. I want to be a cool kid. Why can't I become an altar boy? And I remember my parents looking at me and going, you know exactly why you can't become an altar boy. Cut to 20 years later, my priest is arrested for raping
kids.
Yeah,
you see the movie Spotlight and you say, thank you, mom and dad. That's a great movie.
Yes. Yes. So I've always grown up taught like, it's fucking, don't worry about this religion stuff too much. Just go to school and we'll go to church on Christmas, maybe. And just like leave these people alone. Like I was kind of always taught like, just let religious people be religious. Who gives a shit?
I feel
shit?
The same way. The problem is when they try to change our lives with their beliefs. That's the issue.
Yes. No, I...
You can believe whatever bullshit you want as long as you keep it to yourself.
Look, man. I got no argument for you. I mean, like, obviously, I just straight up agree with you. You know, like, everybody wants to be left alone. Like, nobody wants to be regulated. Nobody wants to be taxed. Nobody wants to be told what they can do with their private property. It's like, you know, I feel like that should extend to some other realms, too. You know, like, if you want to go get an abortion, just go do it. Just let's not, how about we just don't make a big deal out of it? You know what I mean? Like, when people, a couple of years ago, I wrote an article for Reductress because there was a hashtag at the time that was going around called hashtag shout your abortion. And that was my reaction too, where I was kind of like, look, I agree that we all deserve access to abortion, but can we also try to not make a big deal out
of it? You're just trying to make the people in power upset about it so that they stop you from doing it. Just fucking do it and shut up.
Yeah, I was like, look, I'm totally on your side. I'm not going to retweet anything with the hashtag shout your abortion. And I wrote this article with my friend Hannah, that was, it was, the headline was how to hashtag shout your abortion without your Aunt Karen finding out about it. And it's available right now at reductress.com if you want to read
cool.
it.
Great shout out.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm kind of like, as I get older, I am starting to keep my opinions to myself more, and I really like it. Like, the other day, me, Mumkey, Sriracha, and E-Rich were all hanging out at my house, and E-Rich started talking about, like, factory farms.
Oh, and yeah. How factory farms. Well, he was trying to push vegan shit on us.
Yeah, he was doing stuff, and just talking about, like, factory farms and how they contribute to greenhouse... global warming and greenhouse gases. And I'm saying to myself, I agree with everything he's saying. I just wish he would shut up about it. Like, Erich, we get it. We get it. Can we just watch TV? Like, can we all just fucking watch?
We're trying to watch this Wings of Redemption compilation, Erich. Please, keep it civil.
Yeah, exactly. And the older I get, I'm in this house now with 19 people. And these guys love, they're all talking politics. And they're all arguing about global warming and CO2 levels and this and that. And I'm just kind of like, where's the weed? Like, where is the weed? I would love to get as high as possible so I don't have to engage. Yeah, it's weird, man. It kind of sucks because this is the classic boomer path I'm on of just becoming disenchanted and detached. And I remember, like, in my 20s, going to protest rallies and marching and, like, supporting the Writers Guild strikers and fucking raising money to send medical kits to Africa. And I was, like, so engaged in my 20s. And now I'm 37 years old, and I'm like, I would kind of just like to watch The Big Bang Theory, please.
We're like, losing another soldier in the social justice warrior army. This is a tragic day. We needed you. You were the front lines.
I had this opinion for years where it's just like, maybe if you can find a way to make your political opinion funny enough, you can get people to follow it. But now that I'm older, I'm kind of... My favorite comedian in the world is this guy named Tom Sharpling. He's run a podcast for over 20 years. It was like one of the first podcasts. It was originally a radio show. Then they started podcasting. Now they're only podcasting. He's been on since the Clinton administration. And he does this 3-hour comedy show every week. And he says, like, I would very much like my show to be an island away from politics where people can just relax and hide from the horror that is the world for a couple of hours. And I'm really starting to believe that opinion, which is why, like, I'm off Twitter, like, I'm getting off Discord. It's just like, it's so, I don't know, man. What are you like? like what do you think? Do you think I'm just like hiding and I should try to be more engaged?
No.
Like, do you think what I'm doing is like moral or ethical? Like, I never know what to do.
No, I think no piece of satire or comedy has ever in the history of the world changed anybody's political opinion. And when you insert it into your comedy, you're just preaching to the choir, and it's really restrictive. I think it's great. It's a great idea to make a piece of comedy or to make a show as apolitical as you can, because then everybody of all walks of life can come together and enjoy this one thing, and they'll actually have something for once that they can all agree on. That's why I hate Colbert's new show, because it's the most divisive, bullshit, unfunny garbage I've ever seen. If he didn't talk about Trump for one episode, that would probably be the funniest episode of the year. So I think you're right. I think it's good to avoid it and to just try to be funny and to have fun without it. But I don't know. It seems fine to me.
It's tough. Like, I was reading Kurt Vonnegut the other night. I forget what, but he was like, in the 1970s, in the 1960s, every single famous artist, celebrity, and comedian was doing art about how we should not get involved in the Vietnam War. People were putting on plays about it. They were writing books about it. Laffin was talking about it every night. And Vonnegut said, all of our satire had the same effect on the president as somebody dropping a plate full of shaving cream from the top of a stepladder. It just hit the ground with a thud, and we went toward Vietnam, and we were there for 9 years. It's again, so when we did our live show, a guy got up on stage and he was like, I suffer from mental illness, and it's really nice to hear you guys just be funny. Because as somebody who goes through a lot of shit mentally, I really just like hearing two guys be funny. And as I'm getting older, I'm kind of realizing, like, maybe that can be my lane. Maybe I can just like try. Like, I'm putting out this show. Like, we're putting out this show every week. Oh, by the way, listeners, we have a plan. A lot of listeners are like, when does Boomer versus Zoomer come out? And we're both like, good question. Our plan is to record on Fridays and release on Saturdays, which is why I'm currently recording at 1 a.m. from the laundry room of a bro cabin in Tennessee. But I'm kind of thinking to myself, like, if I can put out Boomer versus Zoomer once a week, if I can put out The Loudest Podcast, and by the way, listeners, if you haven't heard of The Loudest Podcast, go to AstereosPodcasts.com. You can hear it's a new show that me and my girlfriend are doing every week.
That's the new, like the Asterios Kokonos main flagship podcast now. No longer are you doing 40 different podcasts. You've got this main one other than Boomer versus Zoomer that you'll focus all of your efforts into. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. Because like at the end of 2018, I put out a Facebook post and a Twitter post. I was like, what did I do well in 2018 and what can I do better next year? Give me your thoughts. And overwhelmingly, everybody said, instead of doing 20 podcasts, can you just do one? And so I'm taking half of their advice. I'm just doing two. I'm doing Boomer versus Zoomer with Mumpke, and I'm just doing The Loudest Podcast with Sriracha.
How did you arrive at that name rather than something like the Asterios Shokinos?
I thought The Loudest Podcast would be easier to Google. Originally, though, I did want to call it The Loudest Podcast in the Universe. And just to fuck with Mannix. But I'm also kind of getting to the point with the fight with Mannix where, like, I'm out of money. The legal bills are now at, like, $37,000. It's been 7 months since I got fired, and like the debt just kind of keeps racking up. I'm kind of getting to the point in the fight with Mannix where like I don't know how long I can keep going with that. I'm also getting, I don't know, time is like a funny thing. I'm getting kind of, I wonder if this fight with Mannix is now hurting me more than it's hurting him. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I obviously I don't live it day in and day out like you do, so I don't know all of the implications and all of the details. But the question is, if your income is primarily coming from fan support on Patreon and things like that, are they supporting you there partially because they want to see you keep fighting Maddox? Or would they all still be like, oh, you know what? We like Asterios through and through. Even if he drops the lawsuit, let's just keep supporting him forever. Because I mean, that we both rely on Patreon for, I assume, a majority
to pay the rent.
Our income. So, and it does suck that you would think, oh, man, do I have to pigeonhole myself to what the patrons want? But that's sort of... Isn't that sort of how the Patreon got so big in the first place? Was we want to rally behind Asterios and help him? Or was it sort of always... Because you got a big-ass Patreon over there.
Yeah, I am the... I'm like the 150th most popular podcast on Patreon. I think I'm 995th biggest overall. And I bet you're like in the 600s. Like because your Patreon does better.
Well,
better
up
than
until
mine.
2 months ago, my Patreon was struggling to stay at $1,000. So this is a very, again, like you get fucked over, Patreon skyrockets. I get fucked over, Patreon skyrockets. My question is, how long until the skyrocket goes down and we're all out of everything?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we are both in the same boat where we're trying to create as much funny content as we can. So to make it worth it to stick around, like the thing is, if my Patreon was paying enough money for me to pay all my bills and my legal bills and put away like $100 every month for retirement, because I'm 37, it's like, well, then there would be no question. It's like if I had an unlimited money bag, I would fight this fight forever. You know what I mean? At this point, it's becoming kind of about the cash. Like, me and Sriracha split our rent. I live in a very far away part of Brooklyn.
Yeah, no shit.
Like, Monkey's been there. Our rent is not crazy. The plan is, if we ever get too poor, just to move to Orlando. Because I got family in Orlando, and in Orlando, the rent is super cheap. My health insurance is one of the things that's really expensive. My health insurance is like $550 a
Thanks,
month.
Thanks, Obama.
Again, I'm old. And so, like, if I were making $5,000 a month on Patreon, I could do it all. I could fight Maddox. I could devote $2,000 a month towards the legal fight with Maddox. I could pay my rent, pay my health insurance, buy groceries, maybe go out to eat once or twice a month, and then put away a little bit of money for the future. You know, the idea of like eventually buying a house, or at least, you know, not retiring in a flea, like in a flea motel,
or,
like on a mattress that will give me bed sores.
Or
yeah,
you could make $4,500 a month on Patreon, and then we average out one live show per month to make up the rest of the money, baby! More live shows! Boomer versus Zoomer coming to a city near you, folks!
I do think we could do pretty well on tour. We each made... me, Sriracha, and Monkey, after we paid for the theater and after we paid for the house manager, we each made about $400 off that show.
And
that's really fucking
good.
When
we leave Sriracha at home for the tour, we'll make $600 each.
Yes,
hell
yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Oh, my
Sorry,
goodness.
Sorry, Sriracha.
That's okay. She understands. She gets it. But what was I going to say? Yeah, it's like, man, I wish I had the money. It sucks, but it's like I'm going deeper into debt for the battle of sanctions. What is it? My GoFundMe made about $9,000. All that has already been sent to the lawyer, and it's like because with the judge retiring, Maddox getting a new lawyer, scheduling, and all this shit, like. It costs so much money just to like get a court date, and then you get down there and the judge as our listeners to this might know who bought the live bonus episode, we got in front of the new judge a couple of weeks ago. The new judge had no idea who we are, had no idea what the case was, claimed that the case was not in the system, And then I get a bill for like $500 from my lawyer, and I think he's being generous. Like, I have to pay $500 for my lawyer to go down to the courthouse to do nothing. Like, I remember this one time my lawyer was out of town, and so he had to brief another lawyer to go in his stead. It was for some other big thing. I got a bill that month for $2,000. We were in the court for about 10 minutes. What is that, like $100 a second? So it's just amazing.
Well, let me ask you.
Yeah?
Would it hurt your heart and or soul to just drop it now, say, Greenberger, you're fired, and never worry about any of it ever again?
That's kind of the question that I'm dealing with.
Because you know the fans want you to keep it up, and I think it's funny if you keep it up, but realistically, it's a financial disaster that will never pay you back. So if you personally don't have a stake in it anymore and you're kind of over it, I think you should just drop it and move on.
I think I'm going to let the battle for sanctions play out, if only because... And by the way, listeners, this is kind of confusing. I understand. There's two things that are happening here. One, I am going for financial and legal sanctions against Maddox and his counsel. I believe that Maddox knowingly, willingly, and purposefully engaged in perjury and misled the court.
He objectively did. It's no question.
Yeah. I mean, it's all there in writing. He, in his initial filings, he pretended that Heather S. was a real person, a woman. He used female gender pronouns, and he was like, she warned Asterix's employer that he was a bad guy and that they didn't listen, and because she warned them, they had a duty to blah, blah, blah. And then, like, later, a couple of filings later, Maddox claimed that there is no Heather S. and that he's Heather S. So it's either, like, you lied in your initial filing or you're lying now. It's perjury. So we are going to the courts to try to get the courts to rectify this perjury by either financially penalizing Maddox and his lawyer, by referring the case to the district attorney, because perjury is a felony offense. And it would be nice for the district attorney to act on this, to do both. It's like the battle for sanctions. I've thrown so much money into it at this point, like over $10,000. That it's kind of like, okay, another $2,000 to see how the battle of sanctions ends up. Okay.
Isn't like, there a certain gambler's fallacy involved with that?
You mean good money after bad?
No, I mean, like, yeah. I already spent so much money, but, you know, I gotta, maybe it'll pay off, just keep throwing it. But in a legal case, that's a little different from gambling, because you know you will win if you just keep throwing in the money, because you are in the legal right. So I guess it's a little different from one more spin of the roulette wheel, I guess.
But it's also not, because there's a chance that the judge could just say, yeah, he committed perjury. Who cares?
Is that how, like, judges work?
The courts...
Can they just be like, oh, yeah, he committed a felony, but boys will be boys.
I mean,
where's
kinda,
Gillette when we need them?
Like the point of... It's like the reason you hire a good lawyer is because you're hiring somebody who can make the judge give a shit. It's like a judge sees hundreds of scumbags a day. And so, like, the question is, like, how do you get the judge to care about acting out against this one particular scumbag? The New York State courts are traditionally biased against sanctioning plaintiffs or counselors. And the reason they're traditionally biased against sanctions is this. They don't want innocent people to not come forward and tell their story because they're afraid of being sanctioned. Like, imagine, you know, if a woman gets assaulted, she goes forward with it, she goes to the police, suddenly the opposing counsel is suing her for sanctions and saying that she's committing perjury. Maybe the woman doesn't have the money to fight back in court. Like, the New York State courts truly do see sanctions as an option of last resort. The other half of this legal puzzle is this would be a full-on countersuit suing Maddox for malicious prosecution. Malicious prosecution is, it's a civil tort where when you know you don't have a case and you are suing somebody purely for an ulterior motive to get them fired, to muddy their name, to get them to spend money, or all three. And in this case, Maddox sued me for all three.
But Maddox sued, you know, 18 people maliciously, though. Why has nobody else stepped forward to do this? Why would it have to be on your shoulders? Well, why wouldn't Patreon do it? He did it to them, too. And he's still making money on Patreon.
I know. Patreon, my ex-employer, the big money players in the game, they don't want the bad press. Like, if they sue this Maddox guy, some reporter might write a whole article about cyberbullying and this and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, my ex-employer or Patreon, they don't want the headlines. Like, right now, I'm kind of the last man standing in the fight for justice. And it sucks. And I'm like really, really hurting for money.
Do you have any confirmation from Dick why he didn't just take, you know, half a month's worth of Patreon to ruin Maddox? You'd think he would be the one who wants to do it the most. But I guess I don't know. We can't really expect anybody to just do this. But I'm surprised he didn't, because it seems like he would find it the funniest.
I think that what Dick wants is to make Maddox a fool. And I feel like Dick has realized that he can do that for free. Like, there's a reason Dick lives in a mansion and I am recording from the laundry room of a 19 bro cabin where they paid for my flight and paid for my room to be here. It's like, Dick is like a good businessman, and I don't think he would spend a dollar unless he was sure that he could get two.
I think the day Dick says on his show, guess what, patrons? We're going to countersue Maddox. I think his Patreon makes up for it, and then some. I think it would be a smart business decision. And then when he wins the court case, then he gets all that money from Maddox anyway. I think if it was a money reason, he would just do it right now. I'd probably pitch into Patreon if it meant Dick was going to sue Maddox, and I know probably 1,000 other people would too.
I think that Dick should probably sue Maddox for a million causes of action. Like, I know of stuff that Maddox has done and said intentionally to hurt Dick's reputation as like a businessman. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, before Maddox dropped that video, Dick was regularly performing at the most important comedy theater in the country, the UCB in LA. He was on regular shows all the time. He was he had a fantastic agent. He was auditioning for commercials. He was acting in a movie that was directed by a mutual friend of ours, Justin Donaldson. And then Maddox puts out this video that is full of lies and obfuscations. And then Dick's reputation and finances are immediately harmed. Like, I think Dick has the grounds for a countersuit in Los Angeles, or especially in New York today. But I know that guy. I've known that guy for a long time. I think he would see it as a waste of money, because I think personally, I'm in this fight for justice. I feel like Maddox did a terrible thing, and he deserves to be held to account to it by the courts. I think Dick probably is not going to spend a dollar unless he's sure he can make two on it. And I think we're just like different people.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know him personally, so I'll just have to just take your word for it. But just from an entertainment perspective for his show, I figured it'd be a shoo-in for sure. But I guess it really is just justice is stuck on the shoulders. This heavyweight, the weight of the world on one boomer hero. Asterios Kokonos. No other man will stand up for what is right. It is up to him to make the decision at the end of the day.
This is all super depressing. Should we cut this lawsuit talk out? Because I would like to end
on
a high note.
I was planning on this episode talking about death and suicide. So this is actually a much happier conversation than what I was planning. We'll save it for episode 16. Because I wanted to, again, I talked about this last week. I wanted to talk about how I got way too high a couple weeks ago and thought I was going to die. But again, we're way over time. So we'll save that for the big, sweet 16 episode of Boomer versus Zoomer. Asterios, do you have anything else for this? I think what is our longest episode yet.
Yeah, holy shit, we've been going for an hour and a half.
Live show shit or something, maybe?
Yeah, you know what? We always give way too many calls to action. So this week, all I would love it for you guys to do would be to maybe share the podcast with a buddy you know that might also want to hear two goofballs yelling. And if you haven't downloaded our back episodes, download our back catalog and start listening from the beginning, because I think we've done a lot of good work on this show and I would love it to be heard. Mumpke, you got anything?
If you're a fan of Andy Signore and you haven't heard episode 2 of the podcast yet, I highly recommend you do. Man, we hit a home run so early in this show. I don't know if we'll ever catfish a man onto a podcast and do what we did. Yeah. Episode 2, man, just right off the bat, we're pulling out the heavy hitters, Asterios. How will we ever top it?
It will find a way. This tour is going to be dope.
In a non-catfish way, is there any possibility of getting my screen junkie hero, Joe Starr, to guest star on this show at any point? He's been on the Dick Show. Why wouldn't he come on Boomer versus Zoomer, Asterios?
I'll email him. Okay. Can you remind, because I'm pretty drunk right now. Can you remind me too later? Yeah. I'll email him or text him. It'd be great.
Or
to
even
have
if
him
he wants
show.
To come on my Twitch show, the Mumpke Jones interview show. I would love to just have a one-on-one with him if he would be up for that too. I'll
put you guys in touch. Yeah.
I'm a really big Joe Starr fan.
All right. Well, hey, we hope you've enjoyed this episode of Boomer vs. Zoomer. Again, sorry if the end it got a little bit dark. These are these are the real life
things. That conversation is the only reason why this will be linked on the Dick Show subreddit. They only care about the show when we talk about lawsuit goss. So I think, you know, at the end of every episode, we'll give them 5 minutes of it. So then they'll get us 30 extra views on YouTube. It'll be fine.
Well, hey, you know, well then for Boomer versus Zoomer, I'm Asterios Kokonos. Thank you
and
so
I've
much.
I've been Mumpke Jones. We will see you next week with some depression and suicide talk, folks. Woo!
See you later.
Are you ready to Zoom?